Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. I just wanted to read a comment that I just received about our Ben Franklin programs. It says here, "Hello, JBL. Just some thoughts. I have been a pressman or a printer for over 30 plus years. Printing is not an exact science, but a craft. A printer must wear many hats: chemist, machinist, salesman, ambassador, craftsman, tradesman, counselor, problem solver with a keen eye for color. We have a saying in our shop that goes something like this: a very difficult job will take a little time. An impossible job may take a little longer. Looking forward to the discussion on Ben Franklin. Keep up the good work. P.S. All pressmen have a little of Ben Franklin in us, too." So that's a very good comment. And again, it is really exciting to be taping our third program on Ben Franklin today. This is the year anniversary of KPCG.FM. So we're very excited to be able to tape Just the Best Literature on this day. Americans enjoy many freedoms in this country, yet really few of us think about how those freedoms came to us. And even fewer Americans realize that not everyone on this planet enjoys the same freedoms that, well, we do. For example, most Americans take for granted our constitutional right to freedom of speech. Some may not even have thought about it or even know what it is. But what is the freedom of speech? And here's a definition right off the internet. It says, "The right to express any opinions without censorship or restraint." Now, it is interesting if you look at the freedom of speech and how some people have used it. They really have perverted it. For example, those who publish and distribute pornography, they rely on the First Amendment or the Freedom of Speech Amendment to be able to do that. But actually, if you looked into the laws say that it is not a freedom of speech to print or distribute obscene literature. So that's just another issue. We're not going to get into that. But there are other ways that this freedom of speech is being perverted and actually being stopped. For example, here's what I mean by that. Let's look at the movement. Let's call it a movement. The movement for political correctness. Now, if you really think about that movement, it does limit our protection to give an opinion. I mean, most people afraid to give an opinion. They're afraid, well, you can say something wrong. Or in other words, if there is an individual that maybe has an alcohol problem, a serious alcohol problem, well, it's just not appropriate to call that person a drunk. We have to say, well, they're sick. Now, even at the government level, we have the vicious, name-calling, finger-pointing movement that accuses everyone who disagrees with the president or his staff to be a racist. Now, that is not really true. You should be able to express your opinion about government if you don't agree with it. Now, if people do that today, you're probably going to be censored and you're going to be vilified, especially if you're a conservative. Most conservative opinion is censored. Now, how is it censored? Well, the liberal media just won't cover it. Now, it's really important that we see how we are losing our freedom of speech. On today's program, I want to show you how Ben Franklin's independent spirit helped establish our constitutional right of freedom of speech. And if you remember last program, we did talk about the independent spirit in the Franklin family. Well, Ben did share that with his brother. Now, I also mentioned on the last program about Cotton Mather. Now, what you won't find in the autobiography, there's some parts of this are discussed, but you won't find all the details that I'm going to give you today. And Cotton Mather was really kind of involved even with the fact that Ben actually ran from Boston to Philadelphia. Now, essentially what happened is Ben Franklin and his brother James tangled with Cotton Mather, his son Samuel, and his father Increase Mather over this issue of freedom of speech. And remember, freedom of speech also does include freedom of the press. But it is kind of interesting that Ben leaves some of this out of his autobiography, and I think that's because he did have some amount of respect for the Mathers, and they were, I think, instrumental in helping people, let's say, live maybe a moral life or a virtuous life or maybe a profitable life. And so I don't think he wanted to really necessarily take the Mathers down very publicly where he could be really pinned with it. but this is interesting background that does not appear in his autobiography. Now, English author Paul Johnson, in his fascinating book called The History of the American People, does give us key details about Cotton Mather and actually how he and Ben had this relationship with each other. Now, Cotton Mather was born in Boston, Massachusetts on February 12, 1663. He died 65 years later in Boston on February 13, 1728. Now, I'll let you do the math. At the time of the Franklins versus the Mathers incident, Cotton Mather and his father and son Samuel were a part of the Boston elite. In other words, what they did is they controlled Boston politically, spiritually, and morally. Now, Cotton does have a very interesting life. He was both a scientist and a Puritan minister. In fact, he was a graduate of Harvard. He went to Harvard at age 12. He was a doctor. He was trained as a physician, but he was also trained as a minister. Now, he is most famous, or I should say infamous, for his involvement with the Salem witch trials. Now, here's what Paul Johnson has to say about this, and it is really quite fascinating. And speaking of the Salem witch trials, he does say, the real lesson of the affair, a contemporary historian may conclude, is not the strength of irrationality, but the misuse of science. Cotton Mather had been trained as a doctor before he decided to follow his father into the ministry and was a pioneering advocate of smallpox vaccination, especially of the young. He was a keen student of hysterical fits as a medical as well as a religious phenomenon. Both he and his father took an interest in the behavior of children under extreme psychic and physical stress, though they reached different conclusions. He and the interrogators of the children were manifestly anxious to hear tales of possessions and sorcery and devilish activity to confirm their preconceptions, and the children intuited their need and supplied it. So he's talking about why Cotton Mather even wanted to get interested in the Salem witch trials. Now he says, here's another quote from this book by Paul Johnson. It said, it was, in fact, precisely Cotton Mather's scientific interests which made him such an enthusiastic witch hunter. He believed that the trials, if pursued vigorously enough, would gradually expose the whole machinery of witchcraft and the operation of the devil, thereby benefiting mankind enormously. And so, it was science that made Mather, an expert witch hunter. Now, here's this last quote about the witch trials, and here's the result of what really happened. And this is kind of a sad quote. It says, accused persons, men and women, who confessed to using witchcraft were released, as it were, rewarded by the court for proving the reality of the devil's work in Salem. The more sturdy-minded among the accused, who obstinately refused to confess to crimes they had not committed, were judged guilty. The hysteria raged through the long New England summer. By early autumn, 14 women and 5 men, most of them respectable people with unblemished records, had been hanged. One man who refused to plead at all was pressed to death with heavy stones. Now, that's pretty severe. But here Johnson goes on. Over 150 people were awaiting trial in overcrowded jails, and some of them died there. The reaction set in during October when prominent people, including the governor's wife, were named. The authorities then came to their senses. The special court was dissolved, and those under arrest were released. So that is not a pretty time in American history. And the point is Cotton Mather was a big deal with that. He was heavily involved in it. So now let's skip ahead to the year 1721. And this is the year when James and Ben tangled with the Mathers over this idea of free speech. Now, if you just do some math, by the year 1721, Ben would have been around 15. He was already working for his brother in his print shop. And if you are looking at pages 14 and 15 in the Dover Thrift Edition, you can see that it was during this time that Ben was really, his ambitions were fired up, and he was doing all this incredible study, and he was doing all these practice efforts to become a great writer. And of course, that's in the autobiography. But this other thing's going on with Cotton Mather is not in the autobiography, and that's why I think it's so interesting. But now, Ben did get his chance to really come out with his writing when his brother James began printing the New England Courant. Now, again, I'm not going to go into all the history today about Ben working for his brother and, you know, how he left the candle shop with his father and all that. You can get that actually in the autobiography. But here's what's important. James had been printing the paper called the Boston Gazette. And this Boston Gazette was published, how they said it on the newspaper, by authority, which means by the Mathers' permission. And so when James's contract was up to do the Boston Gazette, he believed that Boston needed something better. And what he wanted was a paper where people could express opinions other than those that the Mathers actually believed. And he wanted people to be able to really actually make some criticisms of the establishment, which at that time, again, were the Mathers. And so James printed his first issue of the New England Courant. That was the title of his newspaper, the New England Courant. And he made this scathing attack on the establishment, who was Cotton Mather. And so it is really kind of fascinating. Now, here's what was really going on. And it really does tie back to the Salem witch trials. At that time, in 1721, there was this severe epidemic of smallpox in Boston. And the Bostonians hadn't seen something like this for 20 years. And so they were really very concerned about it. And but Cotton Mather, remember, was not only a minister, but he was a scientist and a physician. And he really believed in inoculation. Now, here we're going back to the 1700s. And, you know, the inoculation science would have been very new at that time. Well, James really maybe wasn't even as bright as Ben at the time, and he really came out against Mather in trying to sponsor inoculations for all Bostonians, and because of the witch trials. Remember, what Johnson tells us is that Mather got involved in a wrong way with the witch trials because of science. And so James Franklin did not want that to happen again, in Boston. And so it's really quite fascinating. Here's what H.W. Brands has to say about this in his book. Here's the quote from Brands. James Franklin knew next to nothing of the etiology of smallpox, but he knew he despised Mather for what James judged the eminent minister's smugness and his inordinate influence over the life of Boston. So he wanted to take Mather on, and he used the Courant to do it. Well, what do you think happened to James? Well, he got an absolute backlash really fast. So Increase Mather, his father, publicly denounced the Courant, and he called it the vile Courant. Here's also what Increase Mather said. He says, he could well remember when the civil government would have taken an effectual course to suppress such a cursed libel. Samuel Mather, this is Cotton's son, who was also an apparent beneficiary of inoculation, wrote semi-anonymously in the Gazette that the Courant was trying to vilify and abuse the best men we have. He warned that there is a number of us who resolve that if this wickedness be not stopped, we will pluck up our courage and see what we can do in our way to stop it. So here, James Franklin was really, stepping out on uncharted waters, and he wanted to shake the Boston establishment, and he wanted to help establish freedom of speech or freedom of the press. And it really began to backfire on him. But what happened is, when someone throws down the gauntlet and the status quo bites back, then parties are formed. And so what happened is James thought he'd get some allies. Now, not every one of his allies was as bold as James was. So he did have this group of fellows that got together, and they started submitting things to the Courant under pseudonyms. And some of the names were Abigail Afterwit. Another one was Timothy Turnstone. Another one was Harry Meanwell. Another one was Fanny Mournful. And, of course, there were others. Now, one thing you have to understand, listeners, is that Ben Franklin, here's this 15-year-old kid, he's actually in the print shop. He's actually really studying writing. He's really, getting the itch to write, and he's not included in any of these meetings. And so he's really wanting to get involved in this. And so one morning, James wakes up, and underneath his door, there is a letter from another anonymous or a pseudonym writer. And this is Silence Duguid. Now, because we are students of history and we know a little bit of background, we know that Silence Duguid is Ben Franklin. And so Ben Franklin begins to listen in on all these conversations and what's going on with the Mathers. And then he begins to write under the pseudonym of Silence Duguid to actually help take on the Mathers. Now, I just want you to think about that audience. And this is a 15-year-old boy, and we've had a lot of information come out of Trumpet Daily, and we've had a lot of information come out of all of our publications about the importance of educating youth. And so just think about this. Here is this 15-year-old boy taking on the Puritan establishment. And what he's really beginning to demand is, well, look, there should be freedom of opinion. And so for the next 6 months, then Ben writes these 15 Duguid letters, and they're published in the Courant. And even modern writers today are just amazed at what was written in those. And we're going to talk about some of these things, as we go into these programs. But what Silence did is here's one of the things that she really went after. And, of course, now remember, this is Ben Franklin. And this is what H.W. Brand says in his book, it's called The First American. Here's a quote. He says, "Silence satirized the state of higher education in Boston, lampooning Harvard College, the alma mater of Cotton Mather, and also, by the way, his father, Increase, was the president of Harvard, among other establishment influentials, as a snobbish ivory tower where the students learn little more than how to carry themselves handsomely and enter a room genteelly, which might as well be acquired at a dancing school, and from which, when they return after abundance of trouble and charge, as great blockheads as ever, only more proud and more conceited." So now remember, that is not this older woman who had been through all these horrible trials in her life. Ben Franklin had absolutely, fabricated this whole history with her, which is really quite moving to many people. But Silence Duguid really was out there working against, let's say, the establishment, and really pointing at some of their weaknesses. Here's what Brand also says, and in talking about these Duguid letters, is that had they come from the pen of a mature writer, the Duguid letters would deserve to be considered a delightful example of social satire. Come as they did from the pen of a mere youth, they reveal emerging genius. Some of what Franklin wrote he might have experienced indirectly. Some he extrapolated from his reading. Much he simply must have imagined. He said, but the tone is uniformly confident and true to the character he created. And so we can see here's this 15-year-old boy, and he is absolutely committed to, you know, siding with his brother to make sure that there is a newspaper that exists that had freedom of speech. Now, it is kind of interesting. It says, Brand goes on to say that James Franklin preferred bombs of the printed sort. Now, Ben Franklin was a little bit different. Now, this newspaper created quite a stir. And in fact, people did try and actually bomb Cotton Mather's house. What is not said by Ben is that James obviously was put in prison. Ben found himself the acting publisher and managing editor of the Courant. And, this gave Ben even more control over what was being said in the newspaper. So, here's what Ben boasted to later, and I think is probably in the autobiography. He says, I made bold to give out rulers some rubs. And so, he was going really after it. Here's one of the things Silence Duguid says, that this is really an important quote that we need to remember, and this is the whole point of this program. This is what Silence Duguid wrote, but this is Ben Franklin writing as a 15-year-old. He says, without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, she quoted from an English paper, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech, which is the right of every man. Who would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing the freeness of speech, a thing terrible to public traitors. This talk of traitors was strong stuff, but Silence had not finished. It has been for some time a question with me whether a commonwealth suffers more by a hypocritical pretenders to a religion or by the openly profane. Now, that actually sounds like Donald Trump to me, with what's been going on with this political campaign. He says, some late thoughts of this nature have inclined me to think that the hypocrite is the most dangerous person of the two, especially if he sustains a post in the government. Now, that came from Ben Franklin. That didn't come from his brother, James. Now, James was eventually let out of prison, but then he threw some more bombs, and then he was actually forbidden by the Mathers to even, hold his authority over the New England Courant. And what he did, what James did, is he released Ben from his apprenticeship, and they put Ben over the paper. Now, secretly, what he did is he did another secret apprenticeship where Ben was still underneath him. But eventually what happened is people began to get suspicious who was really Silence Duguid, and people began to suspect it was Ben himself. Here's something else that Ben wrote, and this really did upset the elite. It says, whenever I find a man full of religious cant and palaver, the January 14th issue opined, I presently suspect him of being a knave. Religion is indeed the principal thing, but too much of it is worse than none at all. The world abounds with knaves and villains, but of all knaves, the religious knave is the worst, and villainies acted under the cloak of religion are the most execrable. And so that, again, was from Ben Franklin, a 15-year-old. And so you can see there was an awful lot of genius there. Now, to just get to the conclusion of the story, and it's really, I'm rushing because we're definitely out of time. But the thing that happened then is when Ben's brother finally did get out of prison and he wanted to take back over the print shop, they did not have a good time together. James was very jealous of Ben. James knew he was a better writer, knew he was a better thinker, was beating him a lot to kind of bring him under control and to also, attack his vanity. And so then Ben decided it was time to flee. And what Ben believed was, well, he had the paperwork that said that James had released him from the apprenticeship, and he didn't believe his brother would have the guts to go back into court and to show them that he had this secret apprenticeship, because, well, that would just bring more scathing on him from the Mathers. And so Ben decided then to go off to Philadelphia. And then Ben even said himself that he really believed that when he tacked them on religion, that the Mathers were onto him anyway and were going to give him trouble. Here's what Ben wrote. He says, "My indiscreet disputations about religion began to make me pointed at with horror by good people as an infidel or an atheist." And so people began to think Ben was an atheist, and so he thought it was time to just cut his ties. And then we know the story from inside the autobiography of where he was going. Now, it's interesting. Paul Johnson, in his book, talks about the comparison between Franklin and Mather. And here's, I think, a good quote. And he really does feel that Cotton Mather was kind of a tragic character. He was a great thinker. I mean, he really was a man of education. He did believe in doing good for others, and he really did have right thinking. Here's what Paul Johnson says about Cotton Mather. Says, "He was not exactly a man for all seasons. He was too opinionated and cantankerous for that, but he was a man for all disciplines, an all-purpose American do-gooder and right thinker who adumbrated Benjamin Franklin. But he lacked Franklin's chance to operate on a world stage." And so, in other words, he was born before his time. But we do know that Franklin did hit the world stage. So, and we are still able to read him today. So that's what's really exciting. So remember, if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at jbl@pcog.org. You can also follow me on Twitter, and that address is @jbliterature1. And I will be giving you more announcements about Ben Franklin in there. So thanks for joining me today, and until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.